Last week, we discussed what it means to ask questions, even though the answers are not forthcoming, the answers are not right there in front of us. This idea of asking questions and not always having the answers in front of us is the basic concept of the Emunah Pshuta, of understanding things in a simple fashion when other people might make things a little bit more complex. See, it's difficult because we're living in a very complex world. We're living in a technologically advanced world where things are always complicated, where anything you have to do is this after the other, after the other, after the other. And when things are complicated and frankly annoying, it kind of boggles the mind that God is so easy to come by. That God, that just believing in Him and knowing that He exists is the most pushed thing in the world out there. There are mathematical formulas that people use to prove God's existence. There are mathematical formulas that people use to disprove, chas v'shalom, God's existence. They calculate odds on the possibility of there being an existing world in the universe in order to be there. And I read an unbelievable article years ago, I forgot what it was, one of the science magazines, one of the magazines that like totally, like God is an afterthought, that had a whole thing that even if it's one in, and the number was 10, with like that number afterward, like 10 times a gazillion, whatever it is, like all of them, whatever it is, like even if you look at it, one in a unbelievable amount of numbers with like a 10 with 700 zeros after that, if that's the only chance that one world exists like ours, that's still okay because there's an infinite number of worlds, because black holes could create parallel dimensions which could allow other worlds to exist, which means there's an infinite amount of possibilities of worlds. They're really trying hard. See, the fact is, in our finite universe, the computations that people use and calculations people use in order to prove or disprove God's existence are literally amazing. Absolutely amazing. So Victor Miller has a whole, his whole life was about this. Says that it is ingrained within basic human nature, meaning every single person here has ingrained in their heads that we have to believe in God. It's automatic. There is nothing you have to do it. It's there. And then it's not even lying dormant. It's there. It's pushing itself forward. And the only thing you can do to suppress it is literally hold it back, grab it by the ankle, like Yaakov did to Esau. Grab it by the ankle and don't let it out. It's the only way for Emunah Pshuta not to be there for you, for us not to believe in God. Otherwise, it is 100% there. And he says, people do this. People do this without blinking an eyelash. Most of the world has that belief in God without blinking an eyelash. It's not difficult to attain. It's not hard to attain to be able to even think about it. So what happens the other way? Atheists, people that don't believe in God or claim that they don't believe in God, they laud themselves as being the brightest, smartest, wisest people in the universe. That they figure out what no one else knows. They're so quick, and they understand things so well that others don't, that it must be that the people that don't believe in, that do believe in God, the people that end up believing in it, are a bunch of fools who ignore the truth, who are set up in a system that's doomed to failure, and that they're all wrong and that they're 100% right. That's what it is. So here's the deal with these people. Their egos blind them. Completely and utterly blind them. I have a massive ego. If you don't know me, I'm telling you this now. I have a massive ego. Rabbi Sheinfeld can attest to that. I have a massive ego. And even I am not egotistical enough to believe that I'm the smartest man in the universe. I'm close, but I don't believe that I'm the smartest man in the universe. But each one of these guys, and you can ask them, you can talk to them, they mamish believe this. They believe that they are smart, and anyone that believes in God is just plain dumb. Just good old country hillbilly dumb. That's all it is. You're either smart or completely and utterly dumb. And I'm sorry for using that example. I know there are some country hillbillies here. But regardless, that's that. To say that 6 billion people in the world, possibly more than that, the Muslims, Christians, the Jews of the world, all of these people that believe in God in some way, shape, or form, even if it's Avodah Zarah, but they believe there is a form of God, even if they make it through something of Avodah Zarah, that all of those people are dumber than them, and that they're smarter than all those people is remarkable. That is the greatest ego of all time. I wish I had that ego. I wish I thought I was that smart. But it's amazing. They momish think that way. To think that people are suppressing the truth so that they could have honor in some way, shape, or form, and somehow this is going to help their lives, and that's that, and that they're the only ones who have seen through the ruse, and that this is it. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Fact is, from the womb, children are born knowing that there is a God. They're born knowing that a parent is taking care of them. They're born with that innate feeling, that already feeling inside them, that they cannot take care of themselves. They're born as little, tiny nothings that can't do anything. You leave a baby on its own, it's not like a giraffe where 2 hours later it's up and it's walking around and running around and everything. You leave a baby on its own, he's going to die. There's nothing the baby is going to do to be able to help himself. A baby knows it needs help. It's the same type of innate feeling that we have, that there has to be someone taking care of us. We can't do it on our own. We need help. I think that idea of a child helps us understand it a little bit better. But it's unreal how their egos blind them in that way. So Victor Miller says, you want to put yourself into that emunah pshuta world, that world where you really believe that God is in charge and that He's taking care of us, there's a divine plan and everything. Rav Victor Miller says, open up your eyes. Just open up your eyes. Start looking at the world and start thinking. Just think to yourself. Simple things. This is all I want you to do. Think about your human body. It is amazing. Amazing that we put food inside our body and our stomach separates the good from the bad, ingests the good and allows the good to spread out through our entire system, while taking the bad, expelling it through an intestine, which is as long as a city block sitting inside your stomach, and then making it go through so that you can expel it from your body because it has no redeeming value. If it's so bad that your stomach rejects it completely, you vomit it up because you can't handle it on the inside. Your stomach, with its gastric juices knocking down things, the human stomach is the most complex gut in the entire animal system. The fact that we're able to eat cellulose, which is found in almost every plant, and nobody here, I hope, chews their cud in order to knock it down. And nobody here is allergic or even considers cellulose poisonous. Like some animals have, and if they eat cellulose, they can really get sick and die. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing that our ability to stomach something, it works perfectly. How in the world does the blood flow through to every part of your body? How in the world does it go through? Have you ever been, if you're a Kohen, you can't go anyway, but have you ever been to the Museum of Science and Industry? They have that body exhibit where they show, I'm not saying that you should do this, I'm just saying they have it, that they have all the veins of the human body. They took out every single vein of one human body and they put it on display. It's absolutely disgusting. Absolutely. You should never be eating while sitting there and watching it. But it's unbelievable. There is a body of veins. A body of veins. That's all it is. The only thing it's missing is earlobes. That's all it's missing. It's a full body going all the way through with the fingers everywhere. The whole body is there just in veins. They have that for muscles. They have that for tissues. Your blood is flowing from your heart, which is pumping blood throughout your entire system all day long, every day, not stopping. Not that it stops for once, you're like, whoa, look at that. Then you're dead. You die. And the only way to do that to yourself is if you clog an artery, you make something happen, you can destroy yourself. But otherwise, the blood, it just keeps pumping. It's the greatest battery in the world. And it never stops. It's unreal. It's absolutely unreal. The eye. See, the cameras. This is a... megapixels, I can't even see it. What you'd assume, 8 megapixels, 7 megapixels, that's how much a camera usually has. If you have a really, really good camera, you can get something with like 20 megapixels, 30. You can get really good ones, 200 megapixels, not that much. So what are we dealing with? 100, 60, 40. Okay, you have over 10 trillion megapixels in your eye. 10 trillion. We're dealing with numbers that are beyond the imagination. I think the Wikipedia actually had it down to like 160 billion or something like that. Megapixels in your eye. So I'm just adding, because Wikipedia is always off by 17. So you're just adding a sum and you're putting it in. You have that many megapixels in your eye. You will never be able to get a camera. We have been working on this for years. We will never get a camera that comes anywhere close to the power of a human eye. And it's amazing, because your eye sees things in the opposite direction that they're in. You're actually seeing things, everything is upside down. But when it gets to your brain translates it, it's right side up. So right now, you guys are all on the butter battle book. You're all on the other side of the butter the other way around. But I'm looking at you as if you're sitting down in front of me. You're really just walking on the ceiling right now. But my eye sees, my brain translates. That doesn't even make any sense. The only time that you really get it is when you see a curvature of a spoon and your eye is like, whoa, I'm messed up here. And then all of a sudden you can't see it correctly at all. That's amazing. It is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And you mean to tell me that somehow, some way, somehow this happened, that the world formed a creature that was able to make trillions of megapixels in each eye and translate things into the brain. That happened over time, randomly, by itself. That is awesomely silly. Awesomely silly. Like, I can't even imagine something like that. The fact that our body works that way in such a perfect fashion. And we say it with our brain, with our Asher Yatzar every single day. Asher Yatzar Adam b'chokhma, b'ravah, nikavim, nikavim, chalulim, chalulim. There's an unbelievable thing behind it. It's a crazy little idea. Then he goes on. If you want to see Rabbi Victor Miller, like, waxing poetic, just read what he says about an apple. Just a plain apple. How an apple grows. How the leaves surround it until it's big enough to not be vulnerable to other animals and everything else that's around it. How the apple ends up growing into a luscious color that tells you when it's ready to eat. That is amazing. Amazing. You sit there like, is that ready to eat? No, it's got the wrong color. So how do you know when it's ready? Oh, it'll change. That is awesome! It changes color to tell you I'm ready. And it goes from green, which is I'm still like a leaf, don't eat me yet, unless it's a Fiji apple, to red, which means this is an eye-catching color. You want this. Like your sweatshirt, it's sitting there and saying, you want everybody to look at this, take this and grab it and take it for yourself. That is amazing. And have you ever this has really gotten me. Have you ever seen how certain trees have certain leaves that are on them that end up being like helicopter, like the little wings of a helicopter, that they fall off a tree and start spinning around and spinning around and spinning around till they finally get down? So I finally decided, after seeing this for hundreds of times, I was like, you know what, I gotta look this up. You know what shot is? The seed figured out. The seed figured out. Because we're dealing with random mutations, right? So we assume that the seed figured it out on its own. There is no God, obviously. This does it on its own. That the way for it to land in the best possible position for it to grow out of the ground is for it to make sure that it lands in a certain way. So if it turns itself around, it won't grow. If it turns to the side, it won't grow. But if it lands just like that, it has a better chance of growing. It's not a guarantee, but a better chance. So it forms wings. Again, because this is random, right? And it forms wings, helicopter wings, to be able to spin it down so that it lands exactly perfectly on the ground, which is the only chance that it has of growing. I'm sure that just happens on its own. Sunflower seeds. You ever take a little sunflower and go like that? Like blow it? You just want to? You are planting more of those yellow flowers, which everybody hates except for God, right? And they sit there, and the flower decided on its own, and it said to itself, what is the best way for me to propagate my seeds and to give my seeds over to everyone else? You know what the best way is? For me to have the greatest blowing thing ever. For every kid to look at me and want to blow me everywhere. So it said, it decided, it picked itself up, it had its seeds, and then it sits there, and a little kid takes it, and the seed is sitting there. All the seeds that are sitting there, every seed, which is that big white thing, is like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. It's unbelievable. So Victor Miller goes through and explains that this is the pshat, literally the pshat, behind how we know that God is running this world. The same way that I look at my shirt and I think this was made by a seamstress in Vietnam, and I know that. So too, the world is screaming at you. I was created by a seamstress in Shemayim. Not in Vietnam, in Shemayim. And I know this is true. Because no one is asking me, wow, Rabbi Zimmerman, did that jacket create itself? No, it did not create itself. Some guy named Kenneth made it. And I'm sure he didn't make it himself. It again was probably made in Vietnam or China. And it came here, and I put it on, and I have no questions that this was made. Why? Because it's made almost flawlessly. So if this world is made with this beauty and this unbelievable things to it, with chachma behind literally every part to it, why would you think that's random? Why in the world, how could you think that's random? And if you think it's random, you're going to have a hard time figuring out where shirts come from. You're going to have a real hard time. And tables, and chairs, and cars. Because if you think it's random, then like the evolutionary process to get to a shirt is unreal. Absolutely unbelievable. It takes you to the next line. So we have questions. We have a lot of questions. We should. If God truly runs the world, why do bad things happen? If God truly is running this world, then why are there extra things that don't need to be here? Right? If God is truly running this world, then why does it seem that it's so random? Why does it seem like you could define it in any other way? So good questions. They're good questions. And as we said yesterday, there are some questions that we're never going to have the full answer to. There are some questions that we're not going to be able to answer, and that's okay. Emuna Pshuta is the point to sit back, relax, and say to yourself, it ain't so complicated. It ain't so complicated. Even a country hillbilly like Ben can sit down and say to himself, you know what? There may be a God in this world. It may be there. It's possible it's going to be there no matter what. Chafetz Chaim, toward the end of his life, was not able to learn the same way that he had until that point. He was well over the age of 80, and it was hard for him to learn the Ian. He couldn't pick up a Gemara and learn it in the same way. It's just his age, his health, it was frail. It was fragile. It wasn't the same way. You know, by the way, that even at the end of Chafetz Chaim's life, his teeth were perfect. Teeth were perfect, white and pearly and exactly in order, never had braces. I know that's a shocker. Chafetz Chaim never had braces. And Russia, shockingly enough, was probably not the greatest place for teeth. I don't think there was too many places back then. But he always told people, he said to people at the end of his life, that if you take care of what comes out of your mouth, God takes care of what's in your mouth. That's the Chafetz Chaim. But his rest of his body did not follow that pattern of absolute perfection. And the rest of his body was frail. It was weaker as he got older. He wasn't learning Ian in that way. Instead, he had a chumash that would sit on his shtender all day long. He'd sit there and he'd learn Sefer Bereishis over and over and over again. And he'd read through the same parshas we're learning. It wasn't different 100 years ago. It's the exact same parshas that we're learning now. And he'd start from Bereishis, and he learns Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Shemayim Es Haaretz. And somebody, I don't know who it was that said it, but it's brought down in the Sefer that he would translate it into Yiddish. It would be like me, thinking of Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky sitting there in the front of the yeshiva in Philly saying Bereishis Bara Elokim. God created the world. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's our translating it word for word as he's going through the entire Chumash. Now, I want you to think, if you have issues with the Avos and the Imahos, if you have issues, you can't understand something, there's something that you're looking at, you have a kasha on the Chumash. So if you're the Chafetz Chaim, who knows Kola Torah Kula, as we all know, right? And we're dealing with a person who probably has everything right there inside his head. You think maybe he had a question or two when he's going through the Chumash? Maybe once in a while he'd have a Shiloh. The Chumash Chaim probably had Shilohs that could never be answered by human flesh and blood. Questions that literally only could be answered by a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Every time he went through Chumash. But nonetheless, his Emunah Pshuta shone through. And it didn't bother him. A Shiloh is a kasha. That's part of your learning system. It's part of your learning to be able to gain. And when he sat there with a Shiloh, it was like, forget this. Done with Chumash. Hate this book. Is that what he did? He sat there and he said, if I can get an answer, I'll get an answer. And if not, let's go on. That's the pshat behind what we say, this is what Hashem wants. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to ask questions, to figure it out, to work on things on our own, but not to ever, chas v'shalom, say to ourselves that if we don't have an answer, we're done. That if we can't answer our own questions, then that's it. It's all over. You work harder. And if you don't get it now, you'll get it soon. And if you don't get it ever, I guarantee you there will be a time that you get it. There will be a time when somehow you'll be able to get it. Maybe not in this world. But instead of complicating everything and making it more complicated than it has to be, it's time to oversimplify. To oversimplify and look at the world and say to yourself, it's got to be more simple than this. It's got to be that Emunah is so easy for us to get. You can change your entire essence through such a thought. You can literally change your entire life through such a thought. And if done properly, you can truly become great. And I mean this honestly. You can truly become great in becoming a person who just learns Chumash in the right fashion. You'll teach your kids how to do this. You'll teach others how to do this. You'll be a Rebbe in how to gain that Emunah Pshuta. And once you get that, there's no issues anymore. The world becomes a very, very simple place. A very, very simple place. And it's a place where Kadosh Baruch Hu has told us that we have to do something. We have to work on ourselves, we have to do His mitzvos, and we have to be good people. Be good people. That's all it is. And that's the oversimplification of such a complicated world. Shvizota. Not only to gain an Emunah Pshuta, but to be able to give it over to others and to show others what it is. And it could be, listen, I'm just saying that maybe it's because Tzvi is the gematria of Emunah and that's why I'm so great, you know, and I have this down and I'm so awesome when it comes to this. I have absolutely no idea. I'm just saying, Tzvi does happen to be the gematria of Emunah. I don't think that's it. I had a great Rebbe in this. I had a Rebbe that really taught me how to simply believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I think that's the easiest thing to do. If you find somebody who you can learn with, who you can sit to, talk to, that can help you gain that Emunah Pshuta and get you to the next level. Shvizok, everyone.